Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership in business. On today's show, we will be hearing Dave teach about leadership basics, as well as we've got a great interview coming up. An interview with Cordia Harrington, the founder, CEO, and president of Tennessee Bun Company. Let me tell you, this lady has done some amazing, amazing stuff. I'm going to share with you, as I interview her, how she started out, how she grew, how she fought, how she scrapped, how she clawed in a very tough environment to become an extremely, extremely successful lady. I mean, you're going to be very impressed with what this gal has done. So I'm very excited about that. Who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo, and I am your host for the Entree Leadership Podcast. Last episode, we heard a lesson from Dave on decision-making and talked with Jim Collins, author of the bestseller Good to Great, as well as a bunch of other great books. And let me just say, if you missed that, go back and get it. It was deep. It is spectacular. This week, we're going to be talking about leadership basics. Now, I could tell you, we have a few sayings that we always teach in Entree Leadership. One of those is that the organizations are never limited by their opportunity. They're limited by their leader. You will always, always have opportunity in business. Always. Even in a down recession, when you're thinking, man, I don't know where else to go, if you just spend a little bit of time, you can find another opportunity somewhere. There's always opportunities, but it's not the opportunities that are holding down the business. It's the leader. Organizations are never limited by their team. They're limited by their leader. And as a leader out there listening to this right now, what I want you to do is just be prepared to listen. Be prepared to hear this. Because the truth is, I have to look at the person in the mirror every morning and realize that he is the problem with my business. He is the reason why I'm either doing good or bad. And if I'm doing bad, I've got to take the credit for that. If I'm doing good, I need to spread that out among my team. But if I'm doing bad, I got to realize it is me. I am the reason that my organization is being limited. So here is Dave Ramsey with some leadership basics.
Organizations are never limited by their opportunity. They're limited by their leader. Well, Dave, you don't understand. The economy's bad. Yep. Sure is. It is. And some of you have had the best year of your life. How'd you screw that up? And some of you had the worst year of your life. A friend of mine that's a home builder that moved over into the remodeling world, and he made more money this year than he's ever made in his life. He's going broke as a home builder. Nobody's building houses. Another friend of mine's building houses. He's got 17 starts right now. How do you do that? And most of them are over $1 million. How do you do that? He said, I don't know. He's going to have to farm some of them out. He's going to have to hire some people. Dad, blame. How do you do that? How is it one guy in the landscaping business comes into our office and says, the economy, man, he said, all these people are going broke. All these builders aren't paying me. I put in irrigation. I do landscaping. He said, I can't get any work. And I've been in the business for 10 years and I'm bankrupt. I'm closing up. I'm done. Literally 2 hours later, a guy walks in the office and says, I'm in the landscape business and I have doubled my revenue this year in the same community. What is it? Is one magic? Did one have the power of positive thinking? No. And yes. It's my fault. We used to think in our organization that we help broke people with money, right? Not all of our organization does that, but a lot of our organization helps people that are in trouble with money, and so we help broke people. And so we thought if the economy went bad and there was more broke people, we'd make more money. We kind of thought maybe we had a recession-proof kind of business, a business that might actually be inverse to the economy, that when things got bad, maybe we would do better. Well, I am here to testify, we did not. We did not. We have several of our divisions that were going gangbusters and busting 10, 20, 30% annual growth, just ching, 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 and they went ching, 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 ching. So we had to have a little meeting or two. Still having a couple of them. Sitting down with the salespeople and go, people, here's a little book for you. It's called Who Moved My Cheese? Some of you people are going to have to go hunt the cheese. Apparently you're not salespeople. Apparently you're order takers. And no one's ordering. So you're going to have to sell. I know it's a hard thing to think about. Off your butt. Get with it. Here's what we're going to do. And so we said, you know, this is going to be really uncomfortable, but so is unemployment. So, you know, we're going to have to change some things. And we started getting like all up in people's faces going, change it. It's going the wrong way. Revenues are going down. Expenses are going up when these lines cross. Danger, danger, danger. And I'm not going to be the first one that leaves. It'll be you. I was the first one here. I'm the last one to leave. That's how it works. Right? So we have to kind of sit down and think this through together, don't we? You know, and we're going, problem with us is our economy changed. The way that this segment of our marketplace looked at the financial peace materials was they weren't real worried about financial peace. They were kind of like in panic. And it wasn't, you know, they didn't want to spend any money to not be in, it was weird. And we had to reset our marketing. We had to adjust price points. We had to look at how we were approaching things. Our messaging all had to shift. And our approach into the way we ingested, the marketplace ingested some of our product lines. We killed some entire product lines that were probably overdue to be shot. And you know, what it did was it was awesome. It completely shook up our business. But it wasn't necessarily fun. You know what the problem with my business is? Me. Organizations are not limited by their opportunity. They're limited by their leader. They're still broke people. They still need help. They're not doing it the way we want them to do it, so we're probably going to have to do it the way they want to do it. How is that? Let's find that and change. We're going to change quickly while we're still alive to change. And that's what happens. You got to make a decision. You are the problem, and you are the solution. You're the limiting factor on your business. I'm the limiting factor on my business. Debbie is the limiting factor for our Spanish, our military, and our church. She's the problem with it. And she's the solution. The problem with our marketing is Jen. The solution is Jen. Thank God. But I'll tell you what. We understand that. We own it. It's called responsibility of leadership. And you know, you don't have the option of whining and hoping the government program is going to bail your butt out. You figured out a long time ago that isn't happening. You wait around on that, you're going broke. You'll be dead chicken in the road thing going on there. That won't work. You're the problem with your business. I'm the problem with my business. You're the solution for your business. I'm the solution for my business. Organizations are never limited by their team. They're limited by their leader. Well, Dave, you don't understand about my team. My team's this, my team's that, my team's this. Crap, you hired them. Whose fault is that? Worse than that, you kept them. If the team's the problem, the team's not the problem. I got this issue with George. George is the problem. Well, get rid of George. And don't get another one. Really? How hard is this? We're not going to be mean to George, but quit sitting around whining about, well, I'm in an industry where you have to hire entry-level people who won't work. Oh, shut up. Seriously, I mean, Truett Cathy has built an entire empire with teenagers giving you chicken at Chick-fil-A. Some of the brightest, sharpest teenagers in the universe work at Chick-fil-A. You walk in there, they're clean. They wear a belt. Pretty incredible, you know? They serve you chicken and you're glad. You think it's probably edible and you say thank you. And to a person, they always say, it's my pleasure. Trained, sharp young people, entry-level positions, quality deal. That's his labor force. He didn't accept a dumbed-down version of whatever as your methodology. And you go in these other places and they look at you and say, what? Huh? They can't even make change. God forbid you actually give them real money. They can't make change. Because they've accepted that, haven't they? I'm not going to accept that. You know, he works in shipping. No, we don't have anybody in shipping. You understand those total money makeover books go out the door? The words on those pages of those books save marriages. Do you understand if a family reads that book and does what we tell them to do in that book, it'll change their family tree. The grandkids of the guy who reads that book will be affected. You're not in shipping. You're delivering hope. And you better pray over every one of those boxes as they go out the door. You better make sure that family gets it. And whether you miss a zip code when you're typing or not matters. You don't participate in stupidity here. You're not in shipping. We're not going to dumb this thing down. But you don't just answer, "I just." If anybody ever starts their job description out with "I just," you screwed up. "I just." You just. No, you are. Organizations are not limited by the team. That's a leadership breakdown. It's a leadership breakdown. As a leader, you must understand your enterprise will never outgrow you. I'm the problem with my company. Your capacity, your intelligence, your education, your character, your ability, your vision are limiting your organization. And let me give you the good news. Every one of those you can change. You can change your capacity. You can change your intelligence. Now, not your raw IQ intelligence, which, by the way, there's no correlation between IQ intelligence and success. Most of us that have become wildly successful are 2.7 GPAs. Most of us. Now, some of you are 4.0s. We'll let you stay. But most of us are a 2.7 or a 2.9. That's the average decamillionaire, by the way. Tom Stanley's study, The Millionaire Mind. Go read it. So, now I'm not talking about raw intelligence, IQ, or GPA. What I'm talking about is relational intelligence. The ability to relate to, lift people, and solve problems through human interaction. Relational intelligence. A high level of emotional quotient, EQ. We'll call, and you can change that, by the way. "I'm not very good with people." So change. Start working on that. That is an acquired skill. You know, no doctor ever delivered a baby and goes, "Oh, look, this one's good with people." It's an acquired skill. Education, you can choose that. Read, your character, you can choose how you deal with situations. Your abilities, your vision, you can change these things. And you got people in your organization in, quote, leadership roles, they have the option. No, they have the obligation to be growing in every one of those areas. Every one of those areas. John Maxwell calls this the leadership lid. One of the books that we give you and that we recommend that you read and is mandatory reading for our team is John's book, and he loves me to promote his next book, but he writes another book every 3 weeks. So it's kind of sickening. He's a good friend of mine. I love John. Read everything John Maxwell wrote, but if you're only going to choose one, read his best one, and that's the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. The third irrefutable law of leadership is the law of the lid. I'm the lid on the organization. I'm the thing holding it down. I'm the problem. Some big businesses, not all of them, and I use the phrase corporate America in a derogatory way, where business has lost its soul, but there's lots of big businesses where it hasn't. So there's good ones too. Don't misunderstand that. But the problem with some of them is that everything has become transactional. It's just about the transaction. It's no longer about the person. Who am I being? Who am I as a whole human being? What integrity is a sense of wholeness. It's a sense of oneness. It's a whole person. It comes from the word integer. Henry Cloud talks about that in his book, Integrity. Integrity comes from the word integer, which is a whole number. It's not got any fraction. It's not 1.2 or 1.5 or 1.25. It's 1 or it's 2. It's a whole number. There's no fractioning. There's no inconsistency. It's the same person all the time. You know, at home, at work, at the grocery store, it's still the same person. And they don't have a work person and a front, you know, and there's not all these different faces. There's this consistency all the way through their lives.
So there you have it, leaders. What you have to come to understand is you are the thing either holding your team together, holding your business together, or you're the thing that's keeping it from staying together. Again, it's not you who's making everything work. You have a team. If you have a team, your team is who's making it work. Your team who is busting it and killing it. And obviously, hopefully, so are you. But the thing you have to understand is there are so many aspects of you that are holding your company back or growing it. If you are not putting into you, if you are not building you up, if you are not reading books, if you're not going to events, if you're not learning, read. If you're not constantly putting into you, if you're not constantly working with your team to make them better, which you've heard me say it multiple times, you'll hear me, if you come to Entree Leadership, you hear me say it all the time. I believe your job is to make your team successful, plain and simple. So as a leader, the place you have to start is by looking at you. Now, we have in the studio with us an incredible leader. Somebody, again, I'm so excited to be talking to today. Somebody I'm so excited to be interviewing. Today, we are talking to Cordia Harrington. Cordia is founder, CEO, and president of the Tennessee Bun Company, founded in 1996. Tennessee Bun Company supplies restaurant chains such as McDonald's, Chili's, and Pepperidge Farm. Tennessee Bun Company is one of the most highly automated bakeries, check this out, in the world. And it's right here in our backyard, producing 1,000 buns per minute. Per minute. That's a lot of buns. And ships to 40 states east of the Rockies and to the Caribbean, which I'm sure, Mefford, we got to go on down there and make sure the buns down in the Caribbean are okay.
I think that's important for us to take the show on the road and just to show our fans down in the Caribbean area that we're dedicated.
We're dedicated. That's it. She was number 16 in Fast Company's magazine, fastest growing woman-owned business list in 2004, and woman business owner of the year in 2000. National Association of Women Business Owners. Most recently, Cordia was named a finalist in Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year Awards and the Nashville Business Journal's Best in Business Awards. So she's killing it. She has absolutely been killing it for a very long time. In 2007, Tennessee Bun Company was honored with a visit from President George W. Bush, which is pretty stinking cool. What Bush said about his visit? Throughout 2007, I also was grateful for the opportunity to meet entrepreneurs like Cordia Harrington. A little more than a decade ago, Cordia was a single mom with a dream of starting her own company. Today, she owns a thriving bakery, employs more than 200 people, and calls herself the Bun Lady. One hot day last July, I flew to Nashville to see her factory and meet Cordia. I found a strong spirit of enterprise. Risk takers like Cordia create jobs and opportunities for their fellow citizens and show the world the power of the American dream. Oh my gosh, that just gives me chills, Cordia. I love this. So I have got the absolute privilege of interviewing an incredible lady. We've got in the studio today, Cordia Harrington, welcome to the studio. Thanks for being
Chris.
Here with us.
I'm excited to be here. What a beautiful studio you have.
Well, thank you very much. This is great for us because we've been looking forward to having somebody, a lady in business, not just any lady in business, but somebody who's as successful as you are. So I'm going to kind of give some highlights of what you've done.
Thank you.
You started out in real estate.
I did.
With a huge bankroll of $587.
All my life savings.
Your whole life savings. Mm-hmm. And rented a desk for $3.
And a chair for $1.50 a month.
And a chair for $1.50 a month. So people out there that are always saying, oh, you've got to go deeply into debt to do business. You are, again, you are an example of that, that's not true. In the 80s, you got really bold and decided to do something that only a handful of ladies had done, and that was to own a McDonald's.
Yes, I was fortunate enough when I had the real estate business to meet a couple that had moved to town to buy a home to own the McDonald's in town. And having grown up wearing my cousin's hand-me-downs, I didn't even know you could own a McDonald's, more or less buy one.
Sounded like an exciting thing.
Yes, and I couldn't believe how awesome they were and what a great opportunity it was. And so I did take the leap and was very fortunate to be selected to be a registered applicant with McDonald's.
Now, you got a store.
I did.
In Effingham, Illinois.
Yes.
And it was a good store, but it was not exactly a...
It was a great store, but I owed a lot of money on it. $27,000 a month was my monthly payment. And I needed to figure out a way to grow the sales, and the town was only 10,000 people.
10,000 people trying to create a great amount of revenue there.
Right.
So instead of trying to sell more to the people in town, you found another way to do it.
Well, yes. I bought a Greyhound bus franchise and built it on the corner of my parking lot. And so in the summer, I'd have Well, in the winter, I'd have about 88 buses a day, and in the summer, 122. And thank goodness they were all hungry when they came to a stop in Effingham.
I love that idea. You went from there. You. I believe you picked up at least a couple more McDonald's.
I did.
And then you decided to do something even bigger. You started a bun company. I believe you were a part of surveying some of the companies that were supplying buns for McDonald's.
As an owner-operator, I became a member of the, quote, bun committee. The guys thought that was so funny that the only woman would be on the bun committee.
Right.
But it turned out that I got to travel to wonderful places and see supply chain in a global way for McDonald's. And I just couldn't believe how exciting it was. Sesame seeds in Guatemala and flour in Russia, and I just had to do it. I wanted to be a bun lady. I wanted to own a bakery.
And so you did.
Oh, thankfully.
And if I'm correct, you've taken that company to $41 million. Is
that
correct?
Well, it's over 60.
It's over 60
yes,
now.
My
numbers
you.
Are old.
Yeah.
So over $60 million in making buns for one company. Now it's obviously
well,
a global
now
company.
Today,
but
we serve other customers as well.
Nice.
Very prestigious other elite customers, Sara Lee, Pepperidge Farm, KFC, O'Charlie's, to name a few.
Nice, nice. I know I've got a buddy of mine, John Barr, who owns like about seven McDonald's down in the Georgia area, so I know he's loving this interview right now. Mm-hmm. I love this interview for a couple of reasons. One, I was raised by a single mom. A woman who went out there, busted it like crazy in a very tough world, in a tough place to make it, to be successful, to take care and raise her two boys. So for me, I love seeing successful women in business. I just did a deal for, I don't know if they're competition or not, but Jack's Restaurants down in, we were in Florida, but they're in Alabama, where 80% of the store managers are women.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, it's actually over 80%. But I mean, it was phenomenal to be in that place and see so many ladies, not just executives in the business, but running the actual store. So I was very proud to see that. So my first question to you is that when did you first realize that you were actually a leader?
That's a great question, Chris. I think that the first time I really felt like a leader when I was a part of a volunteer organization called Junior Auxiliary in Russellville, Arkansas, and I was elected to be their president, I was so excited because I thought everybody else in the organization was much better qualified than I, and I had the opportunity to organize activities and fundraisers and motivate and 75 other ladies, and they were busy volunteers. They were moms. And I think I realized at that point, I really like this. Mm. I really like motivating people and helping other people fill their dreams and be successful.
Sure. In Entree Leadership that we teach here, we always say that organizations are never limited by their opportunity. They're limited by their leaders. Why do so many leaders often fail to recognize this reality?
I think that leaders, in the process of giving 100% to the organization or the business, maybe they're not really realistic where their limitations are. Mm. And I know for me, I've been president of my company for 15 years, and as of January 2nd, I'm turning the reins over to somebody that I think is much more qualified, a gentleman that ran a large group of public bakeries, and he's going to come in with the expertise, the training, the experience to take our business to the next level. And, you know, I think my ego would have to be pretty big to think I still had the skills to run a business that's the size it is today versus a $4 million business that I was very comfortable doing.
Which is, it's funny that you say that, because there are, I meet plenty of entrepreneurs that their ego is still very much in check, mm-hmm. and they believe that they can take it. And unfortunately, what happens is they end up holding their business back. You looked at this and said, hey, I've done good. I've gotten it this far, which is very far. You've gone from $587 in a business to a $60 million bun company. So I think that's pretty decent. But also looking at it and going, you know what, if this thing's going to continue to grow, I need somebody stronger than me, somebody who's done more than I have. So that's just, again, very impressive. You're obviously very successful. And I hate whenever you hear the terms as a woman, mm-hmm. because it's just like, you know, you hear people say, well, they're a great woman leader. Well, wouldn't they just be a great leader then? But there's a lot of ladies that are listening to this. We get a lot of questions, a lot of comments in saying, hey, we'd love to hear from a lady's perspective. So as a woman, how do you balance your life with a huge career that you have? How do you balance your family and this career? How did you balance your life when you were, I believe you have three boys, and they were little when you were starting the McDonald's business? How did you balance all of that?
Boy, that's a tough one, and I think that's something I continue to strive to learn to do. It's definitely a journey. I'm sure that when the boys were little, I didn't give them enough one-on-one time. I think we as moms always look back and wish we'd have done more of that. Sure. But I think that I finally realized at some point that I had to be rested. I had to be calm. In order to be a good leader, I had to set an example. And I wouldn't want my employees burning the candle at all ends and trying to come in with just a 10% energy, you know, and if they take time with their family and they take vacation and they do the things that work out, give them energy, then they're going to be a whole lot better when they're there. And so I had to set that example. And I think it, you know, I probably didn't do that in the early years well enough, but I do it today.
Mm. And you probably passed up a few soccer games or a few things.
Yes.
But you're able to, you probably focused a lot in the short term now so that you can focus a lot longer in the long run. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think you've made a good point.
I wonder, and we get this question a lot, how do you handle dealing with male counterparts that have trouble collaborating or negotiating with women?
Well, thankfully, it's a lot better today than it was 20 years ago. I used to sit in meetings, co-op meetings, and I would feel invisible because I would bring up an idea, and then 5 minutes later, a guy sitting two down from me would bring up the same idea, and they'd go, "What a great idea!" And I'd be like, "Are you kidding me?"
You got to be kidding.
So today, I think things are a whole lot better, and I think that whether you're a woman or you're a man or you're green or purple or blue, you've just got to continue to try to be the best you can be, come prepared to meetings, and then you gain credibility by being honest and have good integrity and your facts together. And I think that's just probably a good lesson for all of us. It doesn't matter our gender. We just have to try to continue to be the best at what we're doing. And if we continue to do that, then we'll gain credibility. You know, maybe not the first meeting, but the second or third. You know?
Hopefully. And I don't know if anybody gets it in the first meeting, but yeah. What obstacles do you face being a woman in a strong leadership role? Because this isn't just, you're not leading a team of 10. How many team members do you have?
342, I think,
yeah,
today.
So that's a large, I mean, it's still considered technically a small business, but that's a lot of people. So, how do you, what obstacles do you face and how do you handle those challenges?
I'm very passionate and I'm very excitable. And I think that that's a blessing and a curse because I get real excited about new customers and I get real frustrated if we disappoint a customer. Mm. And so I think that the employees love the energy that comes along with the excitement and passion that I have for them and for the business, for the customers. And I don't think they want to disappoint me at all. So I've had to try to be more in the middle, more predictable as a leader because nobody likes ups and downs. They want, you know, they like the ups, but they don't like the downs. So for me, I've had to learn to operate more in that middle ground where I can be predictably positive and honest when there's a problem. And my own nature is to be super excited. You know, I like the calm thing. I like the excitement.
Right, absolutely. I think that transitions very well into to my next question for you because we get a lot of our lady executives here on staff get this question a lot. How do you walk that fine line of exerting authority in getting things done, but not coming off not coming across as mean or emotional? Because I know I've heard so many times ladies say, "Oh, it frustrates me because the guys look at you and they just go, when you have a problem, you know, if a guy has a problem and he gets upset about it, he's perfectly fine.
But he's assertive.
He's assertive, right. Mm-hmm. If a woman gets upset about it,
then she's the B word.
Right. So how do you combat that? I mean, what kind of fine line is there walking that?
For me, when I'm trying to get a point across and I know I'm going to be in a group setting, rather than being demanding in a group, I will try to lobby the individuals before the meeting, and so that they're prepared with the facts. And I'm usually well prepared, so I make sure they've got the facts so that when it's presented, it doesn't become a volatile issue. Mm. Because I can get too excited and too demanding, and that's not pretty.
Sure. But I love that, because not the volatile and overly excited, but I love the preparedness, because it drives me crazy when people try and bring you into meetings for stuff and they have not given you the information.
Right.
And then
you're blindsided.
You're blindsided, and they're like, hey, come on, what are your ideas on this subject? Well, you've just told it to me 30 seconds ago, so I don't have any ideas.
Right.
So especially for a lady in this role, when you know that it could be a heated meeting, it could get some intense conversation, prepare people ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Get them understanding what the purpose is, what the direction is, mm-hmm. and probably give them, hey, bring three ideas, bring five ideas to the
right.
table.
So that, or if you don't like it, get some time to think about it so you can verbalize some ideas that would work.
Absolutely. I love that. We say here a lot that your business will never outgrow you. What types of things do you do to continually develop your leadership skills, and what kind of things do you do for your personal growth as well?
We've taken on a project a couple of years ago where we try to read a book a month in our leadership team. We all read them privately, and then we come together and have lunch, and we usually bring the author in, and they're always on growing leadership. Mm-hmm. That's been a really interesting journey to do it together with a team of about 20 people. But personally, I have found that if I surround myself with other really sharp business people, I belong to YPO, Young Presidents Organization, for years, and now I've got a group of really great friends that are faith-based. They've got a growing business. They have a passion for taking care of their people. They want to be best in industry. Non-related businesses, but I always get great new ideas. Mm. And not only that, I know them well. I know their goods and their bads, and I see how successful they're being. It just gives me encouragement and hope, and it allows me to have my dreams, without feeling squashed. Sometimes if you surround yourself with people that are naysayers, then, they can squash your dreams. And so I'm a big believer in being around people that are just, like, knocking it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. We despise the dream killers.
Yeah.
Tell me why, or come up, help me to find out a way. If it's not going to work out, help me to find a way to make it work. Something
right.
to that effect.
Do
you feel a good accountability with that group? Like they could call you out, you could call them out, they can, you're probably much closer to them than some of the other people you're working with.
Yes, and definitely they can call me out. And also, I think that I feel comfortable enough to tell them when I'm going through tough times. Mm. Somebody that I've really believed
in. You can't share that with a lot of people.
There's, yeah, exactly, and you're trying to figure out how to handle a delicate situation, and it's always good to say, have you been through this? And typically they have, and they can say, this is what I did when it happened to me.
I love that. Do you see leadership having a direct or indirect correlation with performance?
Totally.
How?
Absolutely, totally. I'll just give you an example in my own business. 3.5-4 years ago, I hired a gentleman to come in, and this is Senior Vice President of Operations, Alan Eddington. He came in. He believed in our core values of people, product, and a profit. And he lived the values, and he gave very clear and specific direction because he had a master's degree from Purdue, and he really understood manufacturing in a technical way. And our bottom line on the same dollar sales doubled in 1 year under his leadership. And it was clarity and focus. And if somebody knows what they're doing and they can bring clarity and focus to any project or any business, then I believe they can directly influence the bottom line.
Mm. I love it. I love it. We've got a saying in Entree Leadership where we say use the 2-to-1 principle, where you have two ears in one mouth.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, because you're a passionate person, so you understand this. We're passionate people. We have a tendency to oversell stuff. We have a tendency to, we want to inject all of our feelings, all of our energy, all of our passions and stuff. I read somewhere once that you said, as a business leader, listening first to the issue, then trying to coach, was some of the most valuable advice you'd ever received. Why is that such an important lesson for you to learn? And how has knowing this helped you to be a better leader?
That is probably the number one key to me to be a successful leader. And I don't do it all the time. I don't listen to my own advice like I should. But honestly, if I will take the time to listen to a person's expectations, there are so many times I go into a meeting and I'm trying to resolve a problem that's not even a problem. If I take the time and say, you know, help me completely understand the issue. And it happened to me just this week. And the person that had an expectation, I was able to easily meet and deliver on the promise to them. But had I not listened, I would really give it the store away, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
It wouldn't have been wise. It's so important to listen to what the other person needs or wants from you. And if we just take, how can I help you? What can I do? What can I do to remove barriers from what you're trying to accomplish? You know, what is your goal? If we ask those kind of questions, especially in business, then we know exactly what we need to do to focus in and solve the problem or make things better.
I just posted a few days ago on my blog about that, on where leaders will come in and assume information.
That would be me.
and a lot of times, it's not as bad if it's a positive issue. Boy, when it's wrong, when it's bad, you know, and the person who's assuming that is usually the type of person who's going to swing an axe, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's the ready, fire, aim mm-hmm. type of thing, you
exactly.
know, then they find out afterwards, oh, crud.
Yeah.
And once
if
you
I would have just asked. Yeah.
once you've destroyed four or five people in the yeah. process and you're just going, maybe just a question would have helped out.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a tendency when people do that with me, I just, instead of responding, I usually say, would you like to ask any questions?
That's a good way to do it.
Because it usually stops some of the tracks and makes them go, okay, all right, fill me in. Tell me what's going on.
Yeah, that's a great way to approach it.
Because when you're on the other end of it, a lot of times, what happens is you get so emotional, you get so worked up because somebody hasn't asked a question, they've assumed something, and now they're attacking you on it.
Right.
And so that's helped me in my leadership to not do that. To, if I step into that role and I see that person, you know, start to cow down or you know, see that it affects them, say, well, stop, hold on. Just tell me about this. Fill me in. So what advice would you give to young leaders out there that you wish that you had been given in your early life? Now, it can be to young leaders. It can be to young ladies. Whatever it is, what would you love to have known starting out that you know now?
I think that I would have liked to have realized earlier in my career, earlier in my life, that problems are really a training ground and that they're not a mistake, that you learn from your mistakes. You don't really learn when things are going great. You usually learn when there's a problem. You learn to be resourceful. You learn not to do something again and to look at them as a blessing, that when you've got problems, you're going to learn more from them than you would from when things are going great. Not to be poor me and not to be, oh my gosh, how am I, you know, just to embrace it and go, what am I supposed to be learning from this?
Sure.
And look at the other side of it. Getting involved with your peers. As I mentioned earlier, YPO, Young President's Organization, it helped me realize that stretch goals were attainable, and it gave me a lot of hope and a lot of confidence just being engaged with other business owners in that organization. And then I think also I was pretty late to learn that it's really a bigger blessing to give than to get, because when you grow up, you know, feel like you don't have enough money, you're always worried about that.
Right.
I don't care how old you get or how much money you've got. And so it really is so much more fun to give and to help others reach their goals than reaching your own.
Mm, I love it. You've got a mantra. I love your mantra. It seems to be no is not an option. I mean, you've been told no a lot in
yes.
your life. You've been told no a lot at McDonald's.
Yes.
You've been told no a ton. You say, as a business person, when you hear the word no, it just means you haven't asked the right question of the right person.
Right.
You make it seem so easy because you've blown past these no's. Can you give a few examples of what this phrase means to you and how it's helped you succeed over the years?
Well, the no is not an option it really resonated with me because I believe that we know it within our own self when we can accomplish something. And I knew I was the right person to become a female supplier for McDonald's. I knew it. Now, they told me no 31 times.
31.
Over 4 years. Every time I'd go and say, I would have did it. They'd go, no. You know, so I kept getting the no, but I kept, you know, introducing myself to other people, making different appointments, trying different strategies, sending an autographed Hall of Fame baseball and saying, let's play ball.
Oh, wow.
I'd stand in front of a flower silo in a flower outfit going, I want to be your baker, and sent the picture. I did everything I could because I knew I could do it. I knew I could do it. And I think we all know when we can do something. Mm. And I think we just have to have the courage to keep trying and be persistent and be resourceful, and that persistence and resourcefulness will pay off. Mm. I believe that.
Not only did you not take no, and some people will get they'll take a no and they'll try and find another way around, but you went to the extreme. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just going to a flower silo.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Getting, you know, sending them the baseball. You didn't just try to find another way to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
You went to a way to say, listen, this, I'm going to be ridiculous in getting your attention so that I get your attention. Right. I'm the one who needs to do this.
Right.
What was the response? What happened on after 31? How did you get the yes? What did they say?
Finally, they said, well, we've decided we are going to have a diversity supplier, and being a woman-owned business would be considered in the diversity category, and we will definitely interview you for the opportunity. And so I was a finalist with three other people. Well, they didn't stand a chance because once I barely got that door open, I can promise you I was over to see everybody and let me run, spend a week in a bakery. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that they knew I knew what I was getting into and I was ready for the challenge.
Oh, I love it. Which really code for their answer was actually, if we do not give this woman the shot.
Yeah. Will she please just be quiet?
One, we can tell that she's got enough energy to make this happen. We've got to move in this direction. Well, Cordia, thank you so much.
It's been a real pleasure.
This has been a great interview. I love this. And again, I love the success that you've had as a person. I love the success that you've had as a lady in business as well. Well,
thank you, Chris.
Very much. We love that. And thank you for coming in on the show.
Okay. You're welcome.
Cordia Harrington, folks. What a great interview. I love that. If you didn't catch it, if you're out there and you're thinking, man, I'd love to start a business, but I just don't think I can. I don't know if I'm in a place that I can start a business. Folks, you just listened to a lady who, as a single mom with $587 in her pocket, her life savings, as she just said, started her business. $587. You got to be kidding me. Quit sitting out there saying that you can't make it happen. Not only that, she didn't even know she could own a McDonald's. The moment she found out, she went after it. She went crazy. She went ballistic. She did everything she could to make it happen. Single mom, raising three boys, now with a $60 million business. Don't tell me you can't do it. I love it. I love it. Great, great information. What'd you get out of that, Mefford?
I think I really like two things she said. One is that problems are a training ground. And when you're young, sometimes you feel frustrated and kind of disappointed that you're not getting up the ladder as fast as you'd like to, or you're not accomplishing as much as you'd like. And you kind of feel like every problem that comes along is a setback. But she said every problem that comes along should be viewed as a training ground, because it's the best kind of training you get. You can't get it in school. You can't get it in books.
And I think so many people get so frustrated with it because when they have a problem or they have an issue, they feel like, oh my gosh, I'm failing. And we just heard from somebody who said, fail, do it. Keep going. Use that, like you said, use it as a training ground.
Yeah. And I liked what she said also. She kind of backed up what Dan Miller had said, is you need a group of people, because a group of people around you that you can sit down with and share with and kind of keep you accountable helps you reach great goals. And she said stretch goals are attainable when you have a group of people that are equally as passionate about achieving their goals as you are about yours.
Absolutely. Good stuff, brother. Great interview, great lesson, great podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We want to make sure that, again, you understand that we are going to be dedicating a whole podcast to you guys, your questions. So send us in everything you possibly can. Whatever you got, you can send it into our Twitter at Entree Leadership, or you can send it into podcast@entreeleadership.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Chris Locurto, L-O-C-U-R-T-O, or at my blog at chrislocurto.com. Also, make sure that you head over to the business section of DaveRamsey.com and sign up for our monthly newsletter. It's free. It's free. And if you want more teaching from Dave or myself right away, plan to attend one of our Entree Leadership events. You can check out EntreeLeadership.com for more information. Well, folks, that puts another Entree Leadership podcast in the books. We are having a blast doing this. We hope you're enjoying it on your end. I have to give some incredible props to the folks that make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our producer. Colin Fatke, our audio extraordinaire. Becky Powell, our queen of enthusiasm.
She's going to get a cult following. Keep that up.
She is going to get a cult following. Obviously, Cordia Harrington for an incredible interview. And as always, Dave Ramsey. So folks, take this information, go out there, make it a better day. Make your leadership stronger. Make your life better. We love having you as a part of this, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Entree Leadership Podcast. Folks, right now couldn't be a better time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, for the one-day event based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. At Entree Leadership One Day, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a business. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com or call 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223.
Hey, this is Daniel Tardy with Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Master Series event. This event offers personal leadership coaching from our executive team, in addition to Dave teaching you his entire business playbook. We're thrilled to announce that our next event will be at the gorgeous Westin La Paloma Resort in Tucson, Arizona, May 6th through the 12th. Our last event sold out early. These events always sell out early because they're limited to 200 people. So if you want to lock in a seat, you better call our team today at 888-227-3223. Just ask for me, Daniel Tardy.
My wife used to call me a Sunday jerk. Why? Because every Sunday as we got closer and closer to Monday, I became a jerk. I could feel the pressure of Monday morning building on Sunday nights. I didn't want to spend another 40 hours in another cubicle for another week of work I didn't love. Maybe you have a job like that. Or maybe you like your job, but you know deep down there's something bigger and more important you'd really like to be doing. Or maybe you've lost your job and this is the chance for you to figure out what you're going to do next. Join me, John Acuff, on February 10th and 11th for the Quitter Conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Based on my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Quitter, this exciting two-day event will help you figure out what your dream really is. Beat the three biggest fears that keep you from pursuing your dream. Use social media to build the one thing every dream needs to succeed. And much, much more. The best part? Tickets are only $99, but space is limited. To sign up for the Quitter Conference on February 10th and 11th, visit johnacuff.com/events. That's johnacuff.com/events.
Running a business is not for wimps. If you lead people on a daily basis, you know how tough it is. You want your team to enjoy coming to work every day with the same level of passion you have. How can you do that? We've got three ways. John Acuff, Chris Hogan, and Chris Locurto. These speakers travel the country inspiring business audiences, both large and small. They're not only endorsed by Dave Ramsey, they're on his team. They live and breathe Entree Leadership. They get it. And they know how to get it across to your people in their own unique styles. They'll share practical, proven, easy-to-understand principles that will impact how your team sees their work and, more importantly, how they see themselves. This is real-life stuff straight from the trenches. Dave's company has won Best Place to Work in Nashville 5 times in a row for a reason. You can win, too. But you have to be intentional about it. Call our speakers group to schedule John Acuff, Chris Hogan, or Chris Locurto today. Call 888-284-2488. That's 888-284-2488 or online at DaveRamsey.com/speakers.